questions and answers on Islamic beliefs on IRIB English Radio. You can send your questions to englishradio@irib.ir.
Sheikh, there are many actually questions in this regard that we want you to shed some light on. Sometimes it is being said that something like traditional medicine, okay, it is quite clear that some scientists, like for example Avicenna and others, came and developed this kind of knowledge and formulated it in the form of, let's say, a structured branch of knowledge. But as for the Islamic, you refer to the Islamic heritage, not the Prophet himself or Imams of the Ahlul Bayt to be acting like a, let's say, physician. How can we actually prove that we really have Islamic medicine? For example, in the sense that Ahlul Bayt had some recommendations, that these recommendations can be looked at, like, for example, medical recommendations, and they really answer in cases of diseases. Let's make it more clear who are going to be the founders of this Islamic medicine. Are you talking about a certain, let's say, books or, let's say, a certain people who developed this knowledge? Or no, you just refer to some recommendations that we receive, for example, from the Imams of Ahlul Bayt or the Holy Prophet. Like, for example, if you want to start eating something or you start your meal, start with a piece of salt and end your meal with a piece of salt. These recommendations are not going to be called as a set of, let's say, comprehensive branch of knowledge called medicine.
First of all, in order to answer your question, I would like to give you one example in this regard. For example, talking about the verse of Noble Quran, verses of Noble Quran are revealed to be a guidance, hudan linnas, guidance for all people. Okay, but there is in the verse of Noble Quran we have a lot of scientific points. There is no contradiction between having these scientific points and to be the purpose of Noble Quran, guidance of mankind.
Very true.
Okay, and to some extent, these points supporting the main goal of the Noble Quran. Okay,
yeah.
Of course, the founder of the Islamic medicine, as I said, is a Noble Prophet and his pure progeny. Mm-hmm. Through many narrations, they explained for us the Islamic medicine.
But the Prophet themselves and his successors refer to the physicians while they have been, let's say, diseased or while they have been ill. So if they were the founder of such knowledge or science, why didn't they themselves refer to themselves to cure themselves?
Of course, they have the knowledge of the Islamic medicine, but it doesn't, it doesn't create any problem if they go and refer to the, physician. Mm-hmm. For example, look at a physician himself. He is a very qualified person. He has expertise. But sometimes he himself referred to a physician. Maybe one philosophy of that is to show the way for people. Mm-hmm. Okay? If to indicate to the people that they should refer to the physician, and the best way maybe is to refer to that physician. I want to say that there is no contradiction here.
Yeah.
You are a qualified person. You have knowledge. When it is necessary, you use that knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes you yourself refer to that physician and to ask him to do a kind of checking for you, in order to benefit from the knowledge of that person.
We have a well-known rule in Islamic sciences that referring to the one who is more knowledgeable, فَاسْأَلُوا أَهْلَ ذِكْرٍ كُنْتُمْ لَا تَعْلَمُونَ, or referring to a person who is a religious authority, to learn your, let's say, Islamic teachings from a person who is more knowledgeable in Islam for that. If they have been knowledgeable in such sciences, there was no need to refer to a person more knowledgeable than them in this branch of knowledge.
As I said, maybe they want to teach people. Maybe some part of the philosophy of that is to teaching people that they should refer to the, you know, the physician. And of course, the physician that they refer to, even those physicians, they have traditional medicine. Not, you know, they have the enjoy to have the traditional medicine which was prevailing in that time. I want to say that in the time of the Noble Prophet and Ahlul Bayt alayhi salam, which kind of medicine was prevailing in that time?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, herbal medicine or, you know, traditional medicine. Just we want to say that this kind of medicine, whether you call it traditional or, for example, herbal, was existing in the time of the Noble Prophet.
We do not have an exact report that what kind of medicine was being practiced there. Because, you know, Sheikh, in this country that we are living 3,500 years ago, cornea transplant was being done. I mean, cornea transplant is something quite new in the sense of surgery, even in the time that we are living now. Its age is less than two decades, but 3,500 years it has been practiced in this country, and the cases have been seen in the fossils that have been found in the city of Sukhta in Iran. See, so it means there might be, let's say, a kind of, profound format of medicine or medication, or let's say different formats of even surgery at the time of the Holy Prophet. So we have no exact report of that.
The point that I want to say here, and I want to reiterate this point, is that this Islamic medicine, or for example, beside that traditional medicine or Iranian medicine, they are completing them each other. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
They are completing each other. And we should enjoy from all sorts of the medicine. Okay, whether Islamic, traditional, Iranian, and so on and so forth.
Yeah.
The reason maybe, as I said, of course, we do not aware about the reason and the final philosophy that why Noble Prophet and his pure progeny, to some occasion, they refer to the, their time, their, you know, physician of their time.
Yeah.
Maybe in order, first of all, it has a lot of philosophy. One of the philosophy is that these medicine are completing each other.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, I'm qualified. I have Islamic medicine. I'm expert in that. I'm founder of that. You know, talking about the Noble Prophet and his pure progeny. But of course, we need other kinds of medicine in order to complete these, you know, Islamic medicine.
Mm-hmm.
I want to say that, of course, we see, unfortunately, some people misusing this Islamic medicine or even traditional or any other medicine. They misuse that. They do not have comprehensive idea about Islamic medicine.
Mm-hmm.
And they cause a lot of problem. But it doesn't refuse the Islamic medicine. And, of course, we can enjoy this Islamic medicine.
Thank you very much, Sheikh, for your explanations and answers to the questions and this very show. Dear brothers and sisters, many thanks for your staying tuned and listening to QAnon Islamic Beliefs from IRIB English Radio. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi.
Inna fil jannati nahran min laban. Inna fil jannati nahran min laban. Li Aliyin wa Husayn wa Hasan.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Pereza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Amin Alemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Round the world with reporters.
People in the blockaded Gaza Strip staged a sit-in to support Palestinian prisoners languishing in Israeli jails and detention centers. During the sit-in, people shouted slogans against the Israeli regime and demanded the release of all Palestinian prisoners. Palestinian prisoners are political prisoners, and they are regarded as heroes and freedom fighters by all Palestinians.
The suffering of Palestinian prisoners has increased in recent months, especially following the Bold Escape operation in September. Prisoners, including women and children, suffer every day inside Zionist jails. The Zionist crimes against the prisoners must stop.
The sit-in comes at a time when hundreds of Palestinian detainees have been denied proper medical treatment in Israeli jails. Over 200 Palestinian detainees have died in Israeli prisons since 1967. During a press conference outside the Red Cross office, the Palestinian Ministry of Health condemned Israel's inhumane treatment of Palestinian prisoners, especially those suffering from chronic medical conditions.
For Palestinian inmates, Israeli prisons serve as gateways towards their death because of medical negligence. Currently, there are 700 very sick Palestinian prisoners inside Israeli prisons without proper medical care. Those sick prisoners are dying slowly as the world watches in silence.
Palestinian prisoners are held in 24 Israeli prisons and detention centers where they are denied basic human rights. Palestinian resistance movement Hamas demanded international protection for Palestinian prisoners.
We call on the Red Cross and all international organizations to help Palestinian prisoners, especially those who are sick in Zionist jails. We demand international protection for Palestinian prisoners. They are suffering because of the racist Zionist practices.
People here are calling on the international community to come out of its silence and help Palestinian prisoners.
According to prisoners' advocacy groups, there are thousands of Palestinian prisoners suffering in Israeli prisons under inhumane detention conditions. Ashraf Shanan, Gaza.
The third edition of the annual conference on Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani, dubbed General Soleimani and New Islamic Civilization. The conference was held online this time, with 50 scholars and political pundits from across the world giving speeches.
General Qasem Soleimani is a martyr, and he died fighting the head choppers and the throat slitters, and a brave, a charismatic leader. And we all honor his life.
General Soleimani was the spearhead of the fight against terrorism and the guarantor of regional stability. Should Iran and Russia have sat on their hands and not defeated the terrorists in Syria and Iraq, they would have had to fight them in their own soils.
We know that the U.S. and some other countries use terrorism under the banner of religion to topple the Syrian government and move the battlefield to Lebanon, Iraq, Iran, and the entire region. But Soleimani shattered all the U.S.'s calculations.
Soleimani was the commander of IRGC's Quds Force, which is in charge of conducting overseas operations.
The security of the Zionist regime is an important issue for all of the American governments. What General Soleimani did was to put Palestine in top of the Muslim world's priorities. And then he gathered and united all of the groups that opposed Israeli occupation as the resistance axis. This was the major motive for the U.S. to assassinate him.
Iran and Iraq have set up joint investigation committee on General Soleimani's assassination. Based on the latest findings of the legal team, 120 people have been identified in connection with Soleimani's assassination. Former U.S. President Donald Trump tops the list.
Iranian and Iraqi judicial teams are seriously following up on a legal pursuit to bring the culprits to justice. Iraq is where the assassination took place and has so far kept close cooperation with Iran. In the four-day conference, we're also going to discuss legal dimensions of Soleimani's assassination.
General Soleimani holds a reputation for eliminating Daesh terrorists in Iraq in 2017. He also led major operations in Syria that led to the recapturing of key areas from Daesh. That's why his assassination is viewed as a huge loss for the region and a big win for the terrorists. General Soleimani's assassination gave a clear clue about who is who in the fight against terrorism in the region. The United States killed the nemesis of Daesh, and that puts Washington on the terrorists' team. This, as Iran is firmly following up on its legal pursuit to bring the perpetrators to justice, saying this is to make sure that such incidents will not happen again against Iranian military figures. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Okay.
cleaning up the mess left behind by Storm Eunice that battered the UK this week. With record speeds of nearly 200 kilometers per hour, much of the country from Scotland to England felt the force of the storm's temper. Footage posted to social media showed trees fall, history be realigned, railway travel disrupted, planes struggling to land, iconic landmarks damaged. The capital, London, issued its first ever rat severe weather warning. Here, too, authorities asked residents not to leave home.
So the message to Londoners is, whilst the Met Office has the red weather warning, stay indoors. A Storm Eunice is the worst storm we've faced in 3 decades. It's really important we don't inadvertently put ourselves in harm's way by being outdoors.
Many heeded the warning and stayed home. Others did not. 3 people were killed.
One of those killed, a woman in her 30s, traveling in a car with a man of the same age here in North London when this tree fell onto their vehicle, killing her, but sparing her partner.
Eunice knocked out electricity for tens of thousands of households on its path. The government had already been warned that the UK lacks the resilience to deal with storms, particularly in terms of electricity infrastructure. Here in London, there is a sense of worry about what's to come next.
I guess you're just not really used to it happening, and I guess it's just one of those things that's going to happen more often, and we need to do more to be prepared to deal with them.
I'd say it's quite concerning because it kind of makes me think of the bigger picture of where the entire climate is headed, where we're headed as a species.
Everything was just in disarray. It was crazy and chaotic, and I know a lot of people felt scared.
Eunice was predicted to be the first storm in 30 years and certainly won't be the last. The clear-up phase is well underway now, but the wider debate about the state of the UK's resilience against storms is only just gathering pace. Saeed Pourreza, London.
On Friday, school pupils held protests in over 40 cities across Italy, demanding the government to put an end to obligatory work placements in the last 3 years of school. The demonstrations were staged after a student, 16-year-old Giuseppe Lenoci, died in a road accident on Monday while he was on board a truck for a school work internship. Last month, another student, 18-year-old Lorenzo Perrelli, was crushed to death by a steel girder of 150 kilos while working in an internship for a private company.
È una vergogna.
They should be ashamed. School principals should be reported to the authorities for striking deals with private companies without being provided assurances on working conditions in factories. They have been reckless and should be punished.
Lavoro non pagato, praticamente sfruttamento.
Schoolwork internship is equivalent to unpaid work. It is just another form of exploitation. In most cases, it doesn't give anything to students. It only helps companies make more profit.
About 3,000 students gathered in central Rome demanding the government to remove the education minister and scrap obligatory work experience programs for high school students introduced by former Prime Minister Matteo Renzi in 2015. In Turin, tension and anger went out of control when a group of students tried to break into the local headquarters of industrial employers group Confindustria and were repelled by police with some batons being wielded, with at least 7 officers being hurt.
We are staging protests also to raise awareness over our living conditions as young adults. Our generation is suffering greatly also from the anti-COVID measures, which restricts our freedom to move, to interact socially. We are left alone with our phones following school lessons online, with our psychological scars, and the government is not doing anything to help us.
School dropout levels in Italy are among the highest in the EU, and due to the pandemic, with the government quickly deciding to make all learning remote. Also, the cases of social withdrawal and self-harm among young people are on the rise. Healthcare professionals are warning. In the past 2 years, and especially in recent months, Italy has been the scene of protests across the country. Rallies have been held against deteriorating living conditions, mandatory vaccination and health passes, as well as what the protesters describe as the government's mismanagement of the COVID pandemic. Max Civili, Rome.
Dozens of Nigerian Muslims, mostly supporters of prominent cleric Sheikh Ibrahim Al-Zazaki, demonstrated in Abuja to condemn Saudi Arabia for the war on Yemen and its continued blockade of the impoverished country. They said the bombing of civilian targets by the Saudi-led coalition and its siege on Yemen has caused a serious humanitarian situation there.
A coalition of Saudi Kingdom and that of United Arab Emirates, we are launching a strike on the innocent people of Yemen. They have been killing a lot of women, children, men, and everywhere, at their houses, at their business places, hospitals, schools, everywhere. Nowhere is safe in Yemen. They are killing, and the world is silent.
The Saudi war has escalated recently as Riyadh has intensified its aerial and ground attacks, worsening the humanitarian situation in Yemen. The protesters said the ultimate goal of Saudi Arabia is to reinstate the former Yemeni president.
They want to return Mr. Hadi back to power. You can't return somebody back to power with killing those people you want him to come and rule. You are killing them and you want him back to come and do what? What is he coming back to do? To come and rule who? Innocent people or dead bodies?
The protesters said human feeling should prevail over the intrigues of the power struggle on the situation in Yemen. They added that the senseless shelling of innocent civilians in Yemen must stop, while the international community has a moral responsibility to put a stop to the carnage. Danjuma Abdullahi, Abuja.
A new report, an assessment of the British government's widely criticized multi-million dollar a year counter-extremism strategy known as PREVENT, first introduced after the 2005 London bombings.
The People's Review of PREVENT essentially puts forward the voices of those who have been impacted by PREVENT, as opposed to the government review, which is speaking primarily to people who are in receipt of PREVENT funding and essentially have a vested interest in having more PREVENT.
Millions of those funds are being injected into areas with 73% Muslim populations, codenamed PPAs, Prevent Priority Areas. The British government dismisses all criticism of its strategy and claims Prevent is a vital part of their counterterrorism work, which safeguards vulnerable people from being drawn into terrorism since 2012. The authors of the 65-page People's Review of Prevent think otherwise.
It hasn't been vital, and I think many people, not just community groups, not just human rights groups, but even members of parliament and UN special rapporteurs have put together criticisms and concerns about the fact that this could potentially be causing radicalization rather than stopping it.
Bearing the brunt of it all, Britain's Muslim community, children interrogated by PREVENT officers, at times without their parents knowing.
Over 50% of the referrals within PREVENT are of young people and children. That includes children as young as four and children at primary school. There's no possibility that they're at risk of being drawn into terrorist activities.
The review cites multiple examples of the devastation caused by PREVENT. The so-called Trojan horse affair is one. False reports in 2014 of an Islamist plot to take over schools in Birmingham, ending up ruining the lives and careers of dozens of school teachers.
The problem with the school was that it was a Muslim-led school, that it was a Muslim-majority school, and what was being built up, if that school had continued its successes, would be a group of Muslim-led schools within a Muslim-led academy trust. That was what was being broken up.
Despite its failures, though, there are now fears that the government here might be marketing PREVENT to other countries, some with questionable human rights records. The authors of People's Review of PREVENT and other critics say this strategy is racist, fuels and legitimizes Islamophobia, and therefore must be scrapped once and for all. Saeed Pourreza, London.
A dream has become a reality. The Conference of the Birds, composed by the brilliant young musician Mehsan Marvasti and inspired by a poem of the same name written by poet Attar of Nishapur in the 12th century, performed here in London. It's a story all Iranians are familiar with, about an epic journey to find the Simorgh.
The Simorgh is to the east what the phoenix is to the west, a mythical creature that symbolizes transformation. And the story of the Simorgh is a spiritual one, full of courage, determination, and self-discovery.
I think it's the first time I've seen so prominently advertised a non-Western musical traditional concert, and I've got a long-standing interest in music from the different parts of the Islamic world. It kind of evokes sort of deeper feelings, spiritual feelings, and the fact that this specific concert is about kind of a spiritual poem, it taps into something which I think a lot of us are looking for, especially in this post-pandemic, current pandemic situation. We're looking for some deeper meanings. So I think it will be striking a chord for a lot of people.
It's a mix of fusion of different music, and that's always interesting. And it's Eurasian music, and it uses different instruments from across Asia to represent birds, and it just sounded lovely.
Even though there are differences, cultural differences between these places and these peoples, and those differences should be recognised in general, but through things like music and art, there can also be synergy, and things can work together as well.
5 years in the making, the Conference of the Birds, conducted by Farnoush Behzad, brought together musicians and instruments from across the world. It fuses Azeri, Chinese, Indian, Arabic, Afghan, Armenian and Persian music, brought to the audience by a Western orchestra. The performance was accompanied by two elocutionists who narrated the story and animated clips of birds and their migratory lives. The art and culture of Iran needs no introduction, renowned worldwide. But young Iranian artists living far from home are always looking for ways to capture the spirit of their homeland and offer Western audiences a taste of Iran. Bianca Rahimi, London.
The Muslim Council of Britain has demanded an independent public inquiry be launched to get to the bottom of who was behind the hoax extremism plot letter which ruined the lives of so many Muslim teachers. The call comes amid rising pressure on Government Minister Michael Gove, who was named and shamed as a key component which turned the bogus plot into a nationwide Islamophobic witch hunt in Birmingham.
It all started when a letter detailing an alleged extremism plot to take over and radicalise Muslim-majority schools in Birmingham was circulated by the press. Mr Gove, who was in office at the time, was aware of the letter, was warned that it's a hoax, yet decided to disregard the advice and pushed ahead with it anyway, adding fuel to the fire. It's believed that it might be his own personal prejudices against Muslims that fueled this decision, based on the fact that he's written material in the past that's been considered deeply Islamophobic.
Press TV spoke to several victims of the witch hunt earlier this week. They are hopeful for legal retribution.
The allegations against us were based on hearsay. The statements that were given by anonymous witnesses weren't substantiated, they weren't corroborated. Yet on the back of these allegations, our careers and lives were ruined, and we were ostracized. I was ostracized, demonized, vilified. Seen as the bad guy.
A public apology for his actions, followed by a change in policy, because the actions that followed what was perceived to be a sinister plot on part of Muslim teachers, governors, and I was included within that bracket, that all of that was a complete fabrication and a lie. And so it has to be a public apology, and B, a rescinding of the policies that subsequently followed.
Apart from the racist and Islamophobic aspects at play, the Trojan horse scandal was used as a pretext to enforce controversial counter-extremism policies which have penalised Muslims ever since. Press TV contacted Mr Gove's office for comment but received no reply. But with demands for answers growing, how long can the silence remain? Robert Carter, London.
Thank you.
The United Nations Aid Chief Martin Griffiths said the humanitarian operations in Yemen is about to start doing a lot less. In his latest briefing to the UN Security Council, he warned that the aid agencies are quickly running out of money, forcing them to slash life-saving programs. His remarks has sparked harsh reactions in Yemen.
The UN's decision to cut humanitarian aid threatens the lives of millions of Yemenis. The United Nations is subject to the conditions of donors, most of whom are from the countries of the Saudi-led coalition, and therefore they are politicizing humanitarian aid to achieve what they have failed militarily. The United Nations describes the situation in Yemen as the world's worst humanitarian crisis, and Yemenis have been suffering since the beginning of the war, and the UN aid is already scarce.
Since January, the World Food Program has reduced rations for 8 million of the 13 million Yemenis it feeds each month. Griffiths said rations may be cut further from March or even stopped, meaning that millions of Yemenis may die of hunger.
When we see the reality and what is happening on the ground and how the Yemeni army continues to achieve victories in various battlefronts, we realize that the Saudi-led coalition has failed to achieve its declared goals, and therefore they are seeking to put pressure on the Yemeni army by reducing humanitarian aid to the country. Reports confirm the high rate of death among children, and this confirms the failure of the United Nations humanitarian operation in Yemen.
The reduction in food rations comes with millions of people in Yemen facing starvation as a result of the ongoing years-long Saudi war and the blockade imposed on their country.
As observers say, the United Nations may announce a death sentence for millions of Yemenis if gaps in its funding are not filled. They warn that if the world body wants to save more lives in Yemen, it must reduce the operational expenses of its agencies that deplete the humanitarian funding. Abdulatif Loshali, Sana.
We are with you. What about you? IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight.
New research has prompted warnings that humanity is financing its own extinction through subsidies damaging to the climate and wildlife. The article you're about to hear has been written by The Guardian journalist Patrick Greenfield. The piece is titled, "World Spends $1.8 Trillion a Year on Subsidies That Harm Environment," study finds. The world is spending at least $1.8 trillion every year on subsidies, driving the annihilation of wildlife and a rising global heating. according to a new study, prompting warnings that humanity is financing its own extinction. From tax breaks for beef production in the Amazon jungle to financial support for unsustainable groundwater pumping in the Middle East, billions of pounds of government spending and other subsidies are harming the environment, says the first cross-sector assessment for more than a decade. This government support, equivalent to 2% of global gross domestic product or GDP, is directly working against the goals of the Paris Climate Accord and draft targets on reversing biodiversity loss, the research on explicit subsidies found, effectively financing water pollution, land subsidence, and deforestation with state money. The authors of the new report, who are leading subsidies experts, say a significant portion of the $1.8 trillion could be repurposed to support policies that are beneficial for nature and a transition to net zero emissions, amid growing political division about the cost of decarbonizing the global economy. The new report calls for governments to agree a target to eradicate environmentally harmful subsidies by the end of the decade at the biodiversity COP15 gathering in China later on this year, where it is hoped a Paris Agreement for Nature will be signed and for companies to reveal the subsidies they receive as part of environmental disclosure reporting. Cristiana Figueres, who was head of the United Nations Climate Change Convention when the Paris Climate Accord was signed, welcomed the new research. She said the subsidies were creating huge risks for the businesses receiving them. "Nature is declining at an alarming rate, and we have never lived on a planet with so little biodiversity," Cristiana Figueres said. She added, "Harmful subsidies must be redirected towards protecting the climate and nature, rather than financing our own extinction." The fossil fuel industry, with $620 billion, the agricultural sector with $520 billion, the water industry with $320 billion and forestry with $155 billion account for the majority of the $1.8 trillion, according to the new report. No estimate for mining, believed to cause billions of dollars worth of damage to ecosystems every year, could be derived. Lack of transparency between governments and recipients means the true figure is likely to be much higher, as is the implicit cost of harmful subsidies. Last year, an International Monetary Fund report found the fossil fuel industry benefited from subsidies worth $5.9 trillion in 2020. But the vast majority of this figure comes from the hidden costs of failing to make polluters pay for the deaths that they cause and for global heating. Douglas Koplow, founder of the organization EarthTrack, which monitors environmentally harmful subsidies, and a co-author of the new report, along with Ronald Steenblick, the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development's former special counselor for fossil fuel and subsidy reform, said, "Subsidy reform allows us to improve the price signal so that we're not protecting income in more polluting industries. It creates space for alternative and cleaner forms of energy to enter the marketplace." A draft target in the United Nations Biodiversity Agreement for this decade calls for $500 billion a year in subsidies to be reformed. But the B Team and Business for Nature, which supported the new research, have said this must be strengthened. "The world has never met a target on halting biodiversity loss, and the failure to act on subsidies was highlighted as a major issue from last decade's targets." Eva Zabi, executive director of Business for Nature, said businesses were often unaware of the extent of explicit and implicit subsidies that they benefited from, but could use their influence to call for change. Iwazabi added, many businesses are benefiting from these environmentally harmful subsidies. This cannot be a taboo topic. We need to speak using facts and understand where the financial flows are going. She added, typically, the subsidies were established with good intentions in mind. We need to level the playing field because right now, some are benefiting from a head start when it should be the other way round. It's a wicked problem. Last year, a United Nations report found almost 90% of subsidies given to farmers every year are harmful, damaging people's health, fueling the climate crisis, destroying nature, and driving inequality by excluding smallholder farmers. Elizabeth Marema, the United Nations biodiversity head, said the new report was critically important. Elizabeth Marema added, the report highlights how redirecting, repurposing, or eliminating subsidies could make an important contribution to unlocking the $711 billion required each year to halt and reverse the loss of nature by 2030, as well as the cost of reaching net zero carbon emissions, she added. The world has failed to meet a single target to stem the destruction of wildlife and life-sustaining ecosystems in the last decade, according to a devastating new report from the United Nations on the state of nature. From tackling pollution to protecting coral reefs, the international community did not fully achieve any of the 20 Aichi biodiversity targets agreed in Japan in 2010 to slow the loss of the natural world. It is the second consecutive decade that governments have failed to meet their targets. The Global Biodiversity Outlook 5, published before a key United Nations summit on the issue later this month, found that despite progress in some areas, natural habitats have continued to disappear. Vast numbers of species remain threatened by extinction from human activities, and $500 billion of environmentally damaging government subsidies have not been eliminated. Six targets have been partially achieved, including those on protected areas and invasive species. While governments did not manage to protect 17% of terrestrial and inland water areas and 10% of marine habitats, 44% of vital biodiverse areas are now under protection, an increase from 29% back in 2000. About 200 successful eradications of invasive species on islands have also taken place. The United Nations said the natural world was deteriorating and failure to act could undermine the goals of the Paris Agreement on the climate crisis and the Sustainable Development Goals. The head of the United Nations Biodiversity, Elizabeth Marema, said humanity was at a crossroads that would decide how future generations experience the natural world. Elizabeth Marema added, Earth's living systems as a whole are being compromised, and the more humanity exploits nature in unsustainable ways and undermines its contributions to people, the more we undermine our own well-being, our own security and prosperity, she added.
Start.
Movement.
Speed.
Live in Hope.
Toward the Peak.
On Youth Station. Youth Station.
I am a Muslim. Islam ID.
whistling for all of time.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. Dear listeners, sisters and brothers, men and women of all ages, hope you're doing well wherever you are. Just take a very special care of your health. Well, this is Arab English Radio. Right now, you're listening to a new episode of your most desired station, the one and only Youth Station.
By the first verse of the Holy Quran,
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim.
Allah will bless you.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim.
Protect you.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim.
Help you.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim.
So ask His blessings.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim.
His protection.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim.
His help.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم
As usual, we're here to provoke thoughts on some very crucial issues. I am Asma, and I'm more than happy to be your host.
And yes. This is Zainab, and I am Asma's co-host today.
Yes, thank you for being here. I'm so happy to be here with you again.
I'm always glad to be with you,
Station.
Asma. I get so good energy.
Yes,
always
you're
with you.
Full of good vibes. So, what are we discussing today?
You say. You love to speak a lot.
It's a personal question.
Yeah, please ask.
I would rather like to ask and know. Well, what are the bad habits you have and you wish to quit them?
Oh my God, on air.
or the people around you.
Well, first of all, let me start with myself, since you started the gun with me, pointing at me.
You can point that at me as well.
The worst quality that I so much try to work mm-hmm. on and so much hate in myself is the things that I would definitely like to quit is being hypersensitive with things.
Oh.
Please send any suggestion, any idea to our email that is englishradio@irib.ir.
Being hypersensitive.
I think it's usual with women. All the women are like this, right?
I don't think
mostly
all
they're
women.
Like this.
Sometimes they do ignore, but I sometimes notice very little things that really, really don't matter or are not important at all. For example, let's go with negative comments.
Yes.
Let's go with negative comments. Be at your home, be at your, like you cooked something and somebody at
and
your family said.
And that affects you a lot.
Yes. See, for example, you put all your efforts in cooking a new dish
mm-hmm.
and the one you're presenting in your home is telling you that, I wish I had a little salt, it would have been much better. Rather than concentrating on a positive part of the story
that's
that she made so many efforts.
Yes.
And now she just... But you as a person should not take it very, very seriously. You should always look at what efforts mm-hmm. you did, you made, you know. You did so much, you put so much energy into it. But that one comment hurts you and you go with it and you next time...
Why do you think it's like that? Why do you think you're so super sensitive?
I think the comments encourage or discourage you.
You care about people's
idea. You care about
idea.
People. Like I recently learned in Quran mm-hmm. that if we do things for Allah, we won't get hurt ever.
Exactly. That was the point that I was going to tell you. We should not actually please everyone, you know? It's not a rule. Have you tried to change that?
I am so much trying to do that. But sometimes I think like...
And how successful you are.
To some extent, but in some very hard things, for example, if it said that, mm-hmm. do this work for Allah, you know, do this work for mm-hmm. Allah. Okay, while you're giving money to like helping needy and all,
yes,
at that time it's understood. But while you're cooking and presenting something to your family, I don't understand.
Expectations. And they must be answered.
You cannot do that without expectations. I mean, you do keep expectations, especially from your loved ones.
Yes. So we're going for a little break.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Youth Station.
You know, worldwide. But speaking of this very thing, which is very usual, being hypersensitive, we should notice some very important facts. Well, first of all, we're not here to please everyone. And we are not able of doing that.
That's so true. You reminded me of a story.
Nobody is perfect.
Exactly.
Nobody is perfect. If we consider this fact, then life becomes easier.
Yeah.
We shouldn't be so hard on ourselves, you know?
In pleasing people. I remember this story, but this story helped me a lot to come out of this thing.
Share it with us.
Yeah.
We would love to learn things.
Of course. There was a man, this is a famous story. There was a man and his son, and they had a donkey. The son was on the donkey, and the father was walking, and once they moved from one place to another, the people around were saying, "What kind of son this is? His father, his old father, is walking and he's on the donkey." Son came down, father sat on donkey. They moved ahead and the people started saying, "How selfish father."
And it's a circle. It would go like that forever.
How selfish father.
Yes.
He's going on with the donkey and see his son. Mm-hmm. He's so tired and all. Then they moved ahead and they both... People said that they don't use their intellect. They can both go on with the donkey, you know. And both sit on donkey. They say, How cruel they are.
Yes.
You know, they don't see the one animal and two people sting on one animal. And then both come down.
So no matter what you do, there is something for them to
comment. They come down. Both come down. Donkey moves alone. Father moves alone. Son moves alone. And people say, how useless.
Yes.
Exactly. Whatever you do, people are going to talk.
There's finally a thing that they would have a comment on.
They would have to comment on. Yeah. They because they don't know, you know why? They do not walk in your shoes.
Yes.
They do not bear the thorns that you have bared in the way. They do not travel your journey. I personally believe that we as humans are not supposed to judge the final judge, the actual judges, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. He's going to do all judgments on the day of judgment. It's also called day of judgment.
Another bad habit, including that
hypersensitivity
that I myself have it, is overthinking.
Oh.
Which is so devastating.
How?
Because it eats me a lot. Because, you know, even before things happen, before bad things start to come into reality,
you start taking tensions before they come.
Yes, exactly. Okay. And I try to change it a lot, but I don't know how successful I am.
Well, I think that's super hypersensitivity.
Yes. In another zone.
Yeah. It mostly happens with the youth, especially in the time of exams.
Yes, time of exams.
I mean, do we ever...
And life has become in a way that no matter if you have an exam, if you have a job, or if you have worries like this, you are prone into this sort of thinking, overthinking, you know?
Overthinking, yeah.
As a mother, as a student, as a person who works, as anything like this.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. You can listen to us at parstoday.com/en.
Just to give a recap to those who have joined us recently, we were talking about things that we have to quit in order to live happier.
Yeah,
I think
we discussed hypersensitivity and overthinking. What else do you think, Asma?
And we talked about the ways. We said that nobody is perfect.
Yeah.
We said that. Stop pleasing everyone.
Exactly. And I remember of this artist. Mm-hmm. There was one artist who was learning from his teacher. He was a very, very great painter.
Yes.
And he told him that I put this painting in the middle of the road in a four-way and ask people to take out, say something about this picture. And everyone started, whosoever came, started writing, if you had used this color over here, it would have been much better. If you had used this, mm-hmm. this. You know, making bad his entire painting.
Yeah.
And then when he takes it back to his teacher, he says that nobody wrote something good about it. You know why? Because people are only concentrated in taking out your...
A negative point.
Yes.
Negative points. And also, Zainab, we should add another point. Sometimes, because you love people, some specific people are very dear to you, you want to please them in a way that it seems like chasing them.
Exactly.
Chasing them into loving you, and then you do everything in your power. But they're still not satisfied. So what happens is that you are the only one who loses everything. Who gets hurt all the time.
Has that happened with you? That has happened so many times with me, like... getting gifts for the person that you like the most,
yes,
and that person does not like those gifts. You spend time, energy, money, everything, and that person does not like your gifts, and you get upset. Oh my God, I spent energy. Mm-hmm. Above all, I spent time, and this person is not appreciating.
So just to sum up the gist of what we talked about is that stop pleasing everybody.
Exactly.
I think if we do that, we would live a happier life.
Exactly. And when you start doing things for Allah, when mm-hmm. we have khulus, when
notice
we have sincerity,
Allah, yes.
when we have sincerity mm-hmm. towards Allah, when we do things for Allah, we have least expectations from people.
Yes,
we do not expect a thank
true.
You. We do not chase people. We do not please them.
Exactly.
And then Allah pleases them himself.
That's very true.
And that's so beautiful.
That's very true, yes. Yeah. Such a beautiful topic it was, and I enjoyed it a lot.
Thank you.
If we had more time, we would have gone like this forever.
Yeah, like Asma and me, dear listeners, if we are kept in studio until evening, we'll stay here. I think we'll stay for a night here.
Yes,
yeah, we'll
exactly.
be discussing, having coffees and all.
And everybody would get tired.
Yeah. But as per the format of our program, we would have to end it now. From my end, I bid a farewell.
Thank you for listening to us. Thank you so very much, dear listeners, sisters and brothers, the loyal audience of IRB English Radio, for lending us your time and attention. You are listening to your favorite one and only Youth Station. If you've missed any episode or you wish to stay tuned to the latest topics and discussions, you can visit parstoday.com. With a click on A Call of Islam, all your favorite programs will pop up and you could find a boundless archive of any topics of your interest. Also, if you have any suggestions or ideas, you could send your emails at englishradio@irib.ir. I hope you're not tired and you enjoyed this session as well. Until another session, I bid you farewell and may Allah protect you with His never-sleeping eyes. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuhu.
Yes.
I am what I am because you made. I have what I have. My love is strong because of you. In weakness, I am braver. My defender and my savior, my giver and my taker, abiding in silence with patience and guidance. Aware when I need you, the light when I seek you, justice, forgiveness, the strength in my weakness. And my love is strong. Because you are the one I call creator, my Alpha and Omega, my protector and my maker. Because of you.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. Thank you. IRIB English Radio.